Blog Talk Radio.
Everyone, and are we excited today? This is Gail Davis. We're going to have Jay Logan on shortly, Nicole Condon, and Stefan Vados. I am so excited about today's show. You have no idea. Today's show is going to bring about something that we've never seen. An invention we've never seen. Even my co-host, I have surprised him. He has no idea, and I'm just so excited. I will just say flying cars. That's all I'm going to say. And it's going to be out for production within the next couple of years. All I can say is flying cars, it's for real. It's already out there. It's being seen. I just can't wait. And I'm so glad you guys are with us. But without further ado, because we're running behind due to technical difficulties, we're going to bring on Jay Logan. My partner in crime, you're back. How are you, Jay?
I'm doing great, and I'm back off that long international plane ride you know so well, Gail.
I know. But, Jay, I leave soon for Europe, so... You know, it's you know how we do here. We're always making a difference, and we absolutely love what we do. Folks, if you think our exuberance and our enthusiasm is fake, by no means. This is Jay and I, and I'm just so glad to have my partner back. We had technical difficulties last week. This plane came a little earlier, and so we apologize for the breakdown, but we are ready to rock and roll. Jay, we have Nicole Condon Duncan. I am so excited to have her on the show. She's from the U.S. here. She travels around the world. She is a mother. She is an entrepreneur, and she helps other entrepreneurs with businesses. I mean, I'm so excited. She has thoughts on education. She has a huge humanitarian project going on. So, Jay, we're going to bring her right on. Is that okay with you?
That is wonderful. Let's do it.
Okay. Hey, Nicole, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Gail? It's great to talk to you.
Thank you so much. And please meet co-host Jay Logan. He's back in San Francisco from Japan.
Oh, terrific, Jay. It's nice to meet you.
Pleasure, Nicole. Nice to meet you also.
Well, Nicole, if you're okay with it, we're going to get right into this show. Is that okay with you, Nicole?
That's terrific. I'm not sure I can compete with flying cars later, but I will try and be a good lead-in anyway.
Well, we look at you more as a good lead-in. You have so much to offer our listeners today. So important, you know, about education, being a mom, you know, balancing work, you know. It's so and your travels are, like, amazing. Jay, when you find out where this woman has been, it just completely blows your mind.
Wow.
So, Nicole, we're just going to ask that you tailor your answers to the questions asked because we don't want to give away all the good stuff, okay?
Okay.
Too early in the show. So, Nicole, you know, I know that, you know, a mother, an entrepreneur supporting other businesses, humanitarian, supportive education, you know, I'd want to know, where do you get the time to breathe? You know, we know you're a mother, entrepreneur, and humanitarian. Tell us how you balance all of this, please.
You know, I think, Gail, I was thinking about this earlier. One of the best things anybody ever said to me is you've got to look at the balance game a bit like the airline safety briefing. You have to put on your own oxygen mask first. Because if you've passed out, you can't take care of anybody else. And I've really tried to pay attention to that with my children, with my career, and with all my other activities in thinking about doing the things that feed my soul as a priority. And I go through on a regular basis and look at my life and kind of go, is this important to me? Am I doing this for, you know, for the right reasons? Or am I just doing it because somebody's told me I should, or because I didn't learn to say no? And so it really keeps me focused on having a passion-driven life. And I think that's very important, because you can't keep yourself going and motivated if the things you're doing aren't things you're doing out of love and passion. And every time somebody said to me, well, you've made so many sacrifices in your career for your children, I think, I've never made a single sacrifice, because every choice I've made consciously, because they were the right things for me, my life, and the people I care about. And I think that makes it possible to have that balance.
Wow. Well, Jay, I know you have a question for Nicole.
Yeah, I'd just like to say once again, it's great to meet you, Nicole. It's wonderful that you're sharing on our show, and it's just an honor for us. But my question to you, Nicole, could you share with our audience what you do for a living?
I'd be happy to. I it's sort of a harder question to answer than it would have been. 15 years ago, as a high-flying corporate executive, I was one of the youngest executives in a Fortune 100 company. I flew all over the world. I traveled continuously. And I decided to stop doing that and raise my children. So now I do a lot of little projects, but I really try and focus on taking the expertise I learned in a large corporate environment and helping people use their talents to start their businesses, and help. I'm thinking particularly not about the early stage of the company around the dining room table, but thinking about how they're going to grow going forward. So, you know, I do a lot of forward business planning with people. I help them think about going into new markets. So we help people move, particularly between the U.S. and Europe. We look at acquisitions with people, but trying to support them in that. So it means that I do a lot of little projects, and I can sort of nip in and out of them. And it really has worked well for me. It doesn't quite have the pace of my big corporate job, but it means I'm engaged with a lot of interesting people with great ideas and that are interested in what they do. So we do a lot of almost education with people about how to grow their businesses and hopefully help give them some skills to do that.
You know,
wow.
I tell you, you know, Jay being a parent to me being an aunt sometimes feels like being a full-time parent. You know, it is a balance. You know, being married, you know, all of us here on the line here are married, and, you know, going through that and managing our families and, you know, doing all that, it's, even though we make conscious choices, you know, it's not always easy, Nicole, as you well know, you know. And with what you've just shared with Jay, I'd love to know is what areas do you see that businesses forget the basics in expansion? Locally, regionally, and globally?
You know, I think the biggest thing I think that's happened in the last 10 years is the ability we all have now to work in a mobile environment and work wherever we are is huge. And the difficulty is, and one of the things that I'd really like to see going forward is how to help support people in a more displaced workplace, which comes back to your question of local. You see so many people, you know, that work from home, but they have no way to connect with other people in their area that may have skills for them. And then, you know, it ends up being isolating. And so I think there's a real effort, you know, there needs to be more effort to look at the local skill base and figure out how to better connect people, and to help them then take their skills to that next level, to the national level, to the global level, so that we talk a lot about big data, but what we need to start talking about is, you know, skill utilization in the same way. You know, we've got data, but we're not using the people correctly behind it. And I think the ability to better make use of the human resources in the world is critical going forward. And it helps us regain that sense of neighborhood and workplace and connection. And I think, I think there are ways to do that. I think social media starts to do that. It's, and you and I met that way, and it's been a terrific connection. And I think that's a big challenge for the workplace going forward that will enable us all to have flexibility to support our families and our careers. But it also means that we need to think more consciously as business owners about how we're supporting our employees and utilizing the skills around the world that will help us grow our businesses.
Wow. Very concise. Thank you, Nicole. Jay, your turn, my dear.
Yeah. Well, I would like to know, this is kind of a global question overall. What advice fits all businesses? Is there just one type of thing you can kind of cover the whole mold? Or I would like to know what advice fits all businesses that you can share.
What advice fits to all businesses? You know, I guess I just had this conversation with somebody at lunch. I really think the thing that so many businesses around the globe have lost sight of is the need to train and develop their people. We've all become sort of enamored of the idea that people are going to go to college, they're going to come out with the skills they need, we're going to plop them into a job, and that's the last thing we need to do for them. And we're not serving them the employees well, because their skills get stale. We're not giving them an interesting environment in which to work and want to keep learning and growing, but we're also not serving our companies well because we're not developing that talent pool. And, you know, that was one of the things that I think you saw, you know, 10 and 15 years ago, those training budgets started to go. So, you know, my biggest thing that I'd like to see global companies doing again, I'd like to see them reinvest in training. I'd like to see them reinstate apprenticeship programs, you know, bring young people in out of high school, give them skills, give them business skills. It will create so much value for your company and create, you know, loyalty and a sense of community within your company. And you will get the employees that you want. You will grow your business, and they will be happy and fulfilled employees. So I would really, that would be the key thing I'd like to see globally happening in companies, because I think it would benefit both people on a humanitarian level as well as the companies on an economic level.
Wow. That's all I can say is wow. You know, Nicole, Jay, can I sneak another question in here, if you don't mind, to Nicole?
Oh, sure.
Okay, because, you know, I don't want, you know, Nicole, we fight over our guests sometimes. So, you know, hearing you say that, you know, Jay, one of the things, you know, Jay and I, we both have our respective businesses, and then we have our businesses together. One thing we'd love to know that we think people in our businesses would like to know, you know, we hear from a corporate standpoint, and I know you mean it across the board, but how does this really get down to the grassroots of the small business who's really local, to the business who's medium-sized, like where Jay and I may be, to the corporate level? Does it apply across the board? Because, you know, small businesses forget that they have to run their business exactly like a corporate business. They forget that. Sometimes
yeah, and I think that's an important point. I think you do have to, even if you are a small business of two people or a medium-sized business of 20 people or a large corporation, you have to be thinking about strategically, what do I want this business to be? Where do I want it to go? Is there, you know, and as a small business owner, how big do I want it to be? Maybe I don't want to be, you know, maybe I'm happy being a $50,000 a year business. Maybe that's exactly right for me. But you still need to think through what's going to happen next. What happens 6 months down the road? What happens a year down the road? Maybe I want to move a little bit more in this direction, and I need to think through the people aspect of that. I do think what I was just saying does apply to a small business. I've had a lot of luck, even on short projects. I will hire teenagers I know to come in and do work for me. You know, very discreet pieces of work. It gives them business experience. It's a big help to me. So I had a research project. We were looking at a potential business opportunity. I just wanted somebody to go in and do a little bit of market research on the price comparisons out there. I hired a 16-year-old who wanted to think about a career in business. She came in. I told her what I wanted, and then she pulled together what I needed for me over a couple of weeks, and I've done this a number of times. It worked for both of us. So I think small businesses can do that. It doesn't take a lot of your time. It does, you know, it builds good relationships. It you know, that's somebody, you know, these are people that will now go off and next time they have to do a project when they get hired out of university, they'll have a little bit of a sense of what's expected for them. And so I do think a small business, you don't have to, an apprenticeship doesn't have to be a formal thing. A training program doesn't have to be formal. But you're enabling somebody to come in and learn your skills, and you're able to benefit from it as well.
Wow. My question that I have another one on that I stole from under Jay, that we're fighting over here with you a little bit. You know, as a mom, okay, I'm sure you have your thoughts on education. And we talked about this. What are some of your thoughts on education? Being your travels and everything, what are some of your thoughts on education and possibly what's missing? Jay, you're going to love this.
Okay.
I have to tell you, I am a real traditionalist when it comes to education. I would really like to see schools return to, you know, old-fashioned methods of, you know, focusing on reading and writing and arithmetic, because I think that the skills people are going to need going forward are going to be about understanding the world around them, being able to analyze the information that they get, and being able to communicate that information. And I think the ability to sit down and read a passage in a book at school and write an essay about it is going to do far more for you in how you prepare for the world than filling in little bubbles on standardized tests. I also think that it makes learning interesting and engaging and more real, so that you develop a passion for learning and lifelong learning. The other sort of piece that fits with that is I think we ought to get out of the mode of thinking of subjects as separate and distinct and go back to thinking about them holistically. I you know, history and literature and social studies and geography and current events all fit together as a piece. They're telling you how your world works. And if you think about them that way and teach them that way, you're helping students understand how to approach their world. Because what the economy needs going forward are people who are adaptable and lifelong learners. And what makes people fulfilled as human beings is the ability to be a lifelong learner, to be forever learning and challenging themselves. That's where the joy in life is. And I think every time we look at our schools and say, all you're going to do is meet these testing criteria and you're going to teach these kids to fill in the bubbles, we're selling the kids short. We're not using our teaching, you know, our teachers' skills, and we are not preparing any of those children for the fast-paced world they're going to live in. But I have no opinions on this subject at all.
I love that answer. I love that answer. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Wait a minute, Jay. I have to get you this one. I got to get you this time. Now, you got two women here ganging up on you. You love the technology, too. You love the technology, Mr. Logan.
Yes, I do. But I know if you lose your phone or you lose your computer, most people are lost, and that's terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Well, you know, I think if I lose my sat nav some days, I'm not sure I can still read a map. I'm sure I could dig the skills out, but it's not going to be pretty. But I do know, you know, the skill I have used the most over the years is the fact that I was taught to write. I can sit down and write out an argument, which means I can talk somebody through my point of view, and I can understand their point of view. And we can have a discussion. And if you don't develop those skills, you can't develop that skill watching YouTube. it's you know, entertaining, but you can't, you're not developing your skills if all you're doing is, you know, listening to a lecture and then regurgitating it. You're not developing the skills you need to actually be the person presenting on YouTube. And I like YouTube. I mean, it's, you know, we all need these entertainment value, and we all need these tools and these gadgets, but we need to not depend on them and think that they are a panacea for all of our ills.
Right. Use some brain cells sometimes. Well, me and Gail always fight over this question, so I got this wonderful question, Nicole, for you. So this is my WWW question.
Okay.
I want to know, when, why, and what had you had your sons receive an education in London?
Why are my sons having an education here?
Because
they're getting
the. Decide that and why?
When did we decide that? We decided that we actually had the opportunity. My husband works for British Telecom, and we had the opportunity when they were very small. They were about 1 and 3, to move back to the UK for a couple of years, and once they started in school here, there was never any question in my mind that they were going to go back to the United States to finish their education. They have every step along the way had their educational needs met. There is not a moment when their curiosity is shut down. They do not fill out any standardized bubble tests. They are challenged every minute of the day. And I think that's partly, I say to people a lot that maybe the teaching of history is the best example. My recollection of school was that when we were very small, we did the Pilgrims, and then we did the Revolution, and then we did the Civil War, and then we started all over again and did them in more depth. And it wasn't until I was in 9th grade that we did Western Civilization as a 1-year history class. I was astounded one day, probably in university, when I realized that Little House on the Prairie took place during the Industrial Revolution, because nobody had ever put it in context for me. And my children's British education, being in Europe and sitting in a former colonial power, their history is longer. Their perspective is bigger.
Wow.
And
wow.
So that's why we're here, and that's why we're staying here.
Wow. You know, I never looked at it like that, Nicole. Wow.
Little House on the Prairie, Industrial Revolution. Did anybody make that connection?
No. Wow. I mean, God, that's deep. Wow.
You know, and what gets me about that is, Nicole, you're going to love what we're, Jay and I, are releasing shortly that we're going to let our audience see. You know, one of our ambassadors, student ambassadors, says, you know, I love the feel of a book, okay?
Oh, yeah.
She's an international baccalaureate student. She uses technology, but she loves the feel of a book. And
good
that brings me to, you know, throwing a rock in the water, Jay, so that people can experience the water, or the, you know, the water, so to speak, of seeing water ripple. You can't, instead of watching it on an iPad. But I'm going to keep going because we have our other guests coming on, and we've got some more questions for you, Nicole, really quickly. We hear you are a humanitarian, and you are planning a trip soon, okay? Would you please tell our audience about it? Jay, I'm so moved by this trip. Like I said, this is a woman extraordinaire. I don't even know how our kids keep up with her.
You haven't met my kids. They're exhausting. They're busier than I am. My kids are busier than I am. I'm really excited about this trip. I was having tea, actually, in London with Jacqueline Lundquist and her husband, Dick Celeste. And Dick was the U.S. ambassador to India under Clinton. And Jacqueline was telling me that she had become involved with Water Health International and started to describe this program to me. And I think access to clean water and safe water is going to end up being, you know, really one of the defining issues in the next 20 years. It limits women's opportunities if they're spending all their time getting water. It is obviously a health concern. And as climate change happens, we are all going to feel the impact of changing water systems and a lack of water. And Jacqueline was describing what Water Health International is doing to me and how they are going in to areas that don't have access to clean water. And rather than doing a pure traditional charity model where a charity comes in, they do some grant making, and they build some sort of project, whatever the humanitarian project is, in this place, clean water, and then they're done, Water Health actually has a modular system to go in and put in water purification plants, and then it becomes a small business run by the local women that becomes a self-sustaining way of providing clean water to their community. And for me, that ticks all the boxes for me. It is something that is about helping women, helping their children, enabling their communities, and building a structure that is sustainable. And so Jacqueline's put together a trip that 17 of us will be going on, leaving on Saturday for 2 weeks. She's going to introduce us all the wonders of India. We've got a little bit of sightseeing, so we're going to go see the Taj Mahal. And then on International Women's Day, we will be dedicating a new one of these water centers in Bangalore that's going to serve a 10-mile radius and give these women and children in these communities access to clean water.
Wow.
And I get to take pictures while I'm there. So.
Now, my question is kind of one of those W questions again, Nicole. Now, I know it wasn't, well, it might be the food, but I want to know, why did you choose India? You know, because me and Miguel, we love curry and all that great stuff, but that's the real reason why you...
Well, I'm going to be honest. I've actually never had a real desire to go to India. You know, there's so many places on my list of places I want to travel. A lot of them... Really, I think, inspired by books I've read and history I've read. And India's never quite made it onto my list. But when Jacqueline started talking to me about all of the places we were going to be, you know, going to see, some of these old forts, some of these old civilizations that connect you back through the centuries to this rich culture, It suddenly became someplace I just thought I had to go and had to see. And the fact that we're going to actually not just hit the tourist spot, but actually go into some of the villages and meet with the women and see the places they live, so that we are tourists, but we're not just kind of seeing the highlights and seeing the sights. That, to me, is what travel is about, and that ability to see inside people's lives and see how similar they are and how different they are from our own. And we're all human. We all connect on a certain level. And I think travel helps you see that. And it also makes you realize the value in different cultures and, you know, where those differences are. And it makes you appreciate what you have, but it also makes you understand that there are things we are missing even in our, you know, wealthy Western lives that we can learn from. So that's why India, it was an opportunity, and I seized it.
Wow.
Wonderful.
You know, Jay and I have this question for you together, and then it's our last question. Nicole, what can people, especially youth, learn from culture and making a difference at a young age like you have in your travels?
I think the biggest thing you can learn is exactly what I was just saying about, you know, seeing everyone's humanity. As I've traveled with my children, I mean, I've taken my children to Nepal. I've taken my children to New York. We actually, you know, Jay just came back from Japan. We went to Japan a couple of years ago. And the thing that has been evident to me as they've traveled is that they are able to connect immediately with other children. Even when there's a language barrier, you know, they were in Nepal, they had a soccer ball, they'd start a kick around no matter where we were, and they were immediately surrounded by 10 other boys. And so I think we all think education has to be formal, that we have to, you know, we have to go think through how we're going to approach travel and what we're going to learn. And I don't think you need to do that. I think what you gain from it at a young age is this ability to understand that other people are just like you. They you are all the same underneath the skin, underneath everything else. And so I think, you know, for children to have that opportunity is a great gift, because they can really understand too how what they do impacts other people. You know, my son's just written a geography essay talking about why he's 11, why we should care about less economically developed countries. And he was able to look at his travels and say, well, I care because there are other people, but I also care because, you know, if they're living in a polluted environment, then that means, you know, that impacts climate change, which impacts me that way too. And so I think that's the great thing about travel. It lets you see your world, and it lets you understand how connected we all are.
Wow. Well, we thank you so much for being on, and we're running just a little bit behind with our next guest. But, you know, Nicole, while you're on your way of picking up your kids today, you might want to hear our next guest. We're so excited. A flying car
I think
out
it
of
Slovakia.
We're putting the
great.
Video
well, I can't wait
on
to hear it.
Oh, my God. It's already done. They're driving the car in Slovakia, and it's already flying as high as a regular plane. I mean, it's unreal. I am so excited to have Stefan Vidal. He's going to go into things about kids and automation and robotics, what it was like for him as a young man. These things are important. And it's important
Absolutely.
For someone like him. So,
well, I can't wait to hear it, and I really appreciate you and Jay taking time to talk to me this afternoon.
Well, we really
yes,
love
Nicole,
the fact that you were with us. Yeah, I mean, really, you've hit on so many areas for us. So we thank you for being on as well. And, you know, we're going to bring our other guests on. So thank you so much for being with us
Great.
Today.
Well, thank you very much. I'll talk to you soon, Gail. Bye, Jay.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Well, Jay, that's amazing. And, you know, we're going to bring Stefan in 2 seconds. So Stefan, give us just 2 seconds. We know your time is limited. You know, Jay, it just blows my mind how clear she was, you know what I mean, on everything she's doing.
She was a perfect guest, and she answered every question just wonderful. And I can't say enough. I mean, she was funny, too, at the same time. Very pleasant.
Yeah, exactly. and that part about knowing she consciously has made her choices.
Yes.
You know, consciously.
She did. Right. And now I want to send my daughter to London schools. Now she's got me hyped.
Well, what was it that you heard that made you want to send your daughter to the school?
Well, because just the fact that she just that little part about the historical value of they have a deeper history. You can learn more. You know, it's not, you know, America, we start with, 1876 or whatever, 1776, whatever. But if you can go back further, you have more of a vision of the whole world situation and why and when and how things started and just the whole history. You just, they know more. The country started before us. So that's very interesting. I never looked at it like that, Gail. You know, I was like, well, because, you know, if you grew up in these schools here, all you hear is what we've done here in America. Most kids don't get a chance to know globally really what has really transpired. So that's why I would want my daughter to go to a London or, you know, because the history is there. Britannia, you know, the history of the whole world is right there.
Got it. You know, all I can say is I am totally, totally, totally excited. Really, really excited. And we're going to bring on our next guest here, Jay. I just want to say a few things about him. He is amazing. Really great guy, okay? And he is really going to go into with us a flying car, Jay. I know I told you I wouldn't tell you until the show. Yes, a flying car, Jay.
I'm serious.
Yes, and it's on the road now.
You mean it's on the road or in the air? Which one? It's really a flying. Okay. Bring this guy.
Yeah.
I don't believe this. I got to really talk to this guy. Wow.
You know, it's I'm blown away.
So it's like Jetson. It's like the Jetson. Remember the TV program, the Jetsons? They had flying cars. We're here. So you mean we're really here now? Yeah, that's what you're telling
me. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, all right. And so, audience, I'm sorry to put this out here, but we're going to get in trouble for this. But, Jay, check your email, because I actually did this to Jay, not knowing anything, and surprised him. So, Jay, your questions are there via email, because I had to surprise him. Are you ready, Jay?
I am ready, but
so Jay, I have sent you the questions for Stefan because I wanted to surprise you and everyone. We've never done this where I don't tell him the guest. So I just had to surprise him. This is a flying car. This gentleman's going to go into. He's from Slovakia. I'm really excited about him, and he's such a great guy. So without further ado, we are going to bring on Mr. Stefan Vidas from Slovakia. Stefan, how are you?
Hello. Thank you for the kind introduction. It's really a pleasure to be on your program. I really appreciate it. And we really built a flying car in the company called Airmobile, and you can check it out on YouTube, how it flies. We have a channel
Stefan, before we go on, we don't want you to give away all of the good stuff, so we're going to ask you questions, and we ask that you answer those questions. Jay, we hear some scratching in the background. Are you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm still, this flying car thing is driving me. Okay, go ahead. Yeah, I'm okay.
You sure you're okay?
I think I am. I think I'm okay.
So, Stefan, we're going to actually ask you some questions, and then Jay and I are going to ask that you answer those questions because we don't want to give our audience all of the good stuff away that you're going to share ahead of time. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, perfect. Go on.
Okay. No problem. So, Stefan, you know, it's just, first of all, thank you for being on our show again, because this is just still trying to pinch myself, you know, to believe that this is happening. So, you know, please meet co-host Jay Logan here. Jay, please meet Stefan Vidas.
Hello, sir. Nice to meet you.
Hello, sir. Nice to meet you, too.
So, you know, Stefan, you're with Airmobile, a company whose innovation is now taking the world by storm. As a young man, did you ever think you would see this sort of just this sort of innovation happen? Do you have an interest in automation? You know, but as a young man, before we go to that, as a young man, did you ever think that you would see this sort of innovation happen at all?
I can say that yes, because I was fascinated by aviation and science fiction books and everything aerospace from childhood. But, you know, in Slovakia, during the 80s, during the communist era, it wasn't possible to get into this subject very much, because only way how to fly the vehicle or how to fly an airplane or helicopter or anything else was only by joining the military, because the sky was closed for the civil aviation during the 80s of the last century. And it was really a hard time to decide whether to join a military and get to the airplane or study something else. So I started my career elsewhere, and I become a journalist later on. And now I speak for the company who is developing an incredible vehicle, which is a combination of a full-fledged car and full-fledged small airplane.
So you're saying that you always had this interest in innovation and automation, even when you were younger?
Yeah, I think every young men or women has some sort of interest into the new things. It's a part of how you explore the world. So if you are able to somehow preserve this child inside you, you can really take it until your adulthood.
Wow. Well, I know that Jay has a question for you as well. Yes, I do. Stefan, what do you think is missing in innovation with the older generation today? Are they open to the latest innovations as the younger generation is?
Yeah, I think some older generation members could be a little bit more conservative, and they can be somehow be afraid of some changes. But you know, the movement of the human civilization is full of changes, and sometimes we need to accept them and somehow take them as inevitable, because that's how we move forward.
Wow. You know, we, Jay and I, feel the same way as Stefan, that many times, you know, even he and I get it, we're very much into technology. And we find that many people, especially the older generation, we don't understand exactly why, but we find that the older generation is intimidated sometimes by the technology, rather than, you know, that's what we get into dialogue about, multi-generation, that they can share with each other. And that brings me to the next question. You know, I know you're a parent, you know, Stefan. Does your children have any interest in automation and in innovation, especially seeing for themselves you being involved with Aeromobile, you know, and the flying car that they have created?
Yeah. I have a son. His name is William. He's 13 years old. And he's really very attracted by everything which is innovative, and also he's attracted by electronics. And what fascinates me these days and these years is that what's possible and what wasn't possible before. So we have drones, we have 3D printing, we have very accessible tools for learning how to program machines. Also, technology is becoming more and more accessible to the younger people. So I'm trying to convince my son to try everything what's possible with the technology, to find out what would be the best career path for the future. And just to describe with an example what I'm doing with my son. I was always interested in flying, so just last year I continuing my study for the pilot license. So we are studying this together, and which is interesting when I see my son studying for pilot license is that how he applies the theories which he learns at the school, mainly at the physics and other subjects, and how he is able to apply them really in practice, because you learn a lot of physics during preparation for the pilot license. So it's really interesting to see how he's exploring the possibilities and how he's applying all the stuff he learns at the school.
Wow. Stefan, do you think this type of innovation is available enough in our country, in America, over here?
If the innovation cycle is faster, I didn't get the question very much. Can you repeat that, please?
Yes. Do you think this type of innovation is available enough in schools in America?
I'm not very familiar with the situation at the schools in America, but as far as I know, I'm visiting the United States pretty regularly. I know that there are programs for the school kids which make the technology accessible and which motivate youngsters to try out things like how to build robots from Lego or how to create something new. I think America is still on the edge with innovation, and we still have to learn a lot from your country.
Well, you know, that brings me to the next one, both Jay and Stefan, because, you know, I had another question, but I'm going to actually reword that question, Stefan, to ask you, do you think, you know, Europe and America, you know, innovation, you think the word innovation, and I love my country, but when you think innovation, you think Europe and Asia, to be quite frank. We're a very good marketing machine, but you do think Europe and Asia, and we have amazing inventions here. But my question to you is, what do you think, you know, watching your 13-year-old son, okay, what do you think that we can learn from each other? You know, what do you think youth in both Europe and America could learn from each other with regard to technology or anything else?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of things we can learn from each other. America is the country where you always had this fast-moving innovation. I call it machine, but I cannot find better word. So really, the economy is working towards the innovation. And in Europe, you know, there was a lot of changes in Europe during the 90s. New countries were created, and I live in one of those countries, and I see that there are a lot of people who try to start new companies and innovate from scratch. So we started in 90s like with a blank sheet of paper, and now we have a lot of possibilities. Then during the 90s also, a lot of foreign direct investment came to our countries, which created a lot of possibilities also for young people to try out some new things. I don't know if everybody is familiar with the fact that Slovakia is number one country in the car production per capita, which is also creating some kind of ecosystem for engineering and for technical education. So sometimes those big political changes lead to some technological changes and changes in the environment, which can motivate citizens or people to be attracted to those new industries.
Wow. Wow. Well, Jay, I know you had a question for Stefan.
Yes, Stefan, where would you like to see the future of technology go overall with the internet to robotics to automation?
Yeah, okay. There are many possible scenarios. I know that there's a lot of talks going on around the role of artificial intelligence, AI. And how we will learn AI, the ethical norms. It's a very important topic because if you look at what people are posting on Facebook or social networks, we are becoming slowly to the stage where all those information can be somehow used to learn to teach the artificial intelligence how to react on some of the statuses, or in the future maybe create some kind of artificial consciousness. Sorry for
wow.
That. I heard that it would be possible to reconstruct your consciousness just from the Facebook statuses in
wow.
Very short time. Then there is also a lot of questions about ethics and artificial intelligence, because we will have self-driving cars in the future, and those self-driving cars will have some kind of autonomous capability, and artificial intelligence maybe will somehow direct them. So those cars will need to make some choices to make roads safer, and there are no rules in the place right now for such a situation. And then there is a lot of development in aerospace and in the industry in which I'm working right now. We are very, very much looking forward for the new organization of the airspace, because we have those drones which are becoming a part of our lives in many areas. And the airspace will need to be organized somehow to accommodate all that air traffic in the future.
Well, Stefan, we're going to actually ask you not to share that yet, because Jay and I have a question for you on that later, if that's okay with you.
Okay.
We don't want to give all the goodies away yet.
You know, Jay and Stefan, one of the things that really hit me about Jay's question to you just now is that, you know, Stefan and Jay, when I hear you talking about artificial intelligence, this is where Jay and I sometimes, you know, we love our relationship on the radio, because he and I get to really share our opinions, and we both love technology. But one place where I guess I stop and get concerned about is what I love about your flying car is it allows a human being to drive it. I think when we get to artificial intelligence, it almost starts to erase the human being from having something to do with life. So that's my thought. Stefan, I have a question for you. What is Aeromobile about? What are they about? And what is the flying car about? You know, people can actually now see the car on your website, test it on the road, on the highway, and literally, Jay, go from the highway to the open field where it takes off on a runway and is flying on the level of a plane. I mean, my question to you is, like, what is this all about, and what is it like for you? I mean, we wish we were you right now, Stefan. What is it like being a part of the team?
Yeah, Aeromobile is from one side, a fulfillment of designer Stefan Klein, who started to dream about the freedom and how to achieve that with some kind of a new object or new kind of vehicle. So he was always fascinated, as I was, with some challenges, and combining a car with airplane was I think more than 90 years old challenge, because right after the first airplane was created, it was in 1930 or 1914, I think, just 3 or 4 years after that, Glenn Curtiss from United States started to think about the combination of a car and airplane, and created Curtiss Aeroplane in 1917. But from that time, there were many attempts, and there were some 17 or so attempts to create it. And I think Stefan Klein, during the last 25 years, find the solution how to combine those two different worlds, because when you take an airplane, it should be very narrow and light, and when you take a car, it's usually pretty wide and also heavy. So these are only the very basic characteristics, but if you have to combine those, you need to find out the solution. So the solution was to transform the object from one stage to another, and then the Aeromobile was born. It was 25 years in the making, and a lot of models were designed during the time from Aeromobile 1.0 to Aeromobile 3.0, which we have as a prototype today and which we fly almost every day.
Wow. Well, Jay, I know you want to sneak another question in there, so just go there.
Yes, I want to sneak this question in there. How would this affect air regulations? I have more questions, but this is the main one. So, you know, with the drones.
Okay.
And
yeah, okay. We are building Aeromobile to fulfill all the existing air regulations. So currently it is built to so-called light sports aircraft category, which means that you can fly it under so-called visual flight rules. And we are completing the full airworthiness certification right now. The whole team is very busy with that, and it's also exciting time because we do a lot of test flights around the airfield. And we are building the vehicle to that point that it will fulfill all the air regulations needed for European Union at this time. And then we will start with the certification for the automobile part or car part, which will take a little bit longer time. But we already have initial assessment, and we are pretty happy, and also I am happy that there will be no big changes in the construction of the vehicle and overall design. So we are pretty excited how the work is going right now. The vehicle flies very well. It can be compared to any small airplane. And regarding the driving characteristics, it behaves as a normal car when the wings are folded.
You know, Jay, do you want to go? Because we know that Stefan doesn't have much more time.
I
had another question.
Yes, I just wanted to say, what type of gas does it use? And how far can it fly? And when is it available to buy? How much?
Yeah. It's hard to say when it will be available because we are in the prototype phase. And I would like to fly it as soon as possible. But currently, only test pilots can fly the prototype because we need to do all the testing. But I sat in the vehicle, and it's very comfortable. And so we have a plan to release it to the market in the following 2 or 3 years. And basically, every private pilot can fly it, or holder of the private pilot license can fly it. We will need to certify it for the other market, the new EU, which might take some time. So that's why I'm not very specific with the years, how many years it will take. There need to be process followed, and it takes some time. And what was the first question? Because I couldn't hear that very well.
The other question was, can you put like regular unleaded gas in this thing, or can you just go to a regular gas station? And how far can you go? Can I fly 400 meters, 500? You know, how far can I go with this car? You know.
Yeah, the part why this project is so fascinating for me is that we are doing a lot of configurations, also with the engines, and one of the engines we use, and which will be used maybe in the final product also, is using unleaded fuel from normal gas station. So you just need to drive to your closest gas station, fill it with the normal gas, and then you can also drive and fly with this engine we have currently in the prototype. in the future, we plan to make it more sustainable. We have plans for some combination of electric and classical fuel engine, but these plans are really far away right now. So you can use normal gas from the gas station, and you can fly up to 700 kilometers, which is about 350 miles, which is, by the way, distance for which so-called advanced flying automobile is the best vehicle to cover or to drive or fly, because usually when you go for a trip which is 300 to 400 miles, you either use a car or combination of a car or plane, and none of these alternatives you have are so efficient. So if you go by car, it takes you a longer time to cover those distances. And if you combine car and plane, you go to the place where you usually don't want to be, an airport, go through the security checks and all that stuff which is needed from safety reasons. And then you take flight, which is the shortest part of your journey on such a small distance. So for distances up to 500 miles, this could be a good solution, we think.
Wow.
To combine our multimodal vehicle.
Wow.
Well, you know, here's our last two questions, and that is, you know, one of the things, I'm sorry, Jay, I cut you off. Did you want to say something?
Yeah, just real quickly. Top speed. Top speed of this vehicle.
How is the speed? You know, we need to follow regulations. So we tested the vehicle on the road, on the highway. I tried to recalculate it to the miles. So it was 80 miles per hour. On highway, and in the air, it depends on winds and overall situation in the air, but you can achieve 100 miles per hour in the air, if I'm correct with the calculations. But you can be much faster, and faster you fly, less you consume.
Really, less gas you consume, Stefan?
Yeah, because if you fly faster, there will be more lift generated, which makes flying easier.
Wow. Well, that comes to my last two questions. I would like to know two things. The first one is dealing with road regulations and air, you know, regulations at the same time. I'm still trying to imagine a car, you know, where you've got cars flying overhead, you know, almost like the Jetsons cartoon we had here in the States, you know, and you've got cars on the road. What do you see the future like with that? And, Stefan, I personally want to know, what do you see for kids in the future? I mean, with this going on, what will life look like for youth in the future?
Yeah, I would start maybe a little bit with the wider answer, because we have seen a start of so-called light sports aircraft industry maybe 15 or 20 years ago, when a lot of new airplanes and easy to access airplanes came to the market, and which motivated a lot of interested people to come to this segment of aviation, and they started to build planes or just bought one and using it for the leisure, or some of them just commuting. So we see that this segment growth was really phenomenal over the years. The pilot population is also growing. There are more than 500,000 pilots just in the United States. So we see that this industry is growing, and I don't know, but I can't see as many airplanes over my head because, you know, there are flight levels and regulations which do not allow to fly over some areas, and this airspace is a very regulated space. So I'm not afraid about the future being full of flying cars or airplanes, which will be accessible to a lot of us. And I have one personal experience from the airfield where we do a championship for the gliders. And I saw 70 gliders in 1 kilometer square space, one over another. And it wasn't very, very distracting or something to be afraid. I'm also a very big fan of automating some of those airspace corridors. So the future might be about more crowded sky, but I'm also hoping that experts and professionals who are working on these things and subjects, they are doing a very good job, and they are doing a lot of work to make it really, really something that we can live with.
Wow. Well, Stefan, we so thank you for being on with us and sharing about your son and your experience personally, and we know that in another month or so, or sometime in the future, we will have Yaraj on, but it was just such a pleasure to have you on and to share your experiences and to also share with us that Slovakia is one of the top countries, you know, with innovation technology. That, I think, I want to say this to the world, that opens up partnership opportunities, you know. And
yeah.
We thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
So with that said, we just say keep on doing the great work. Oh, and we also just want to let our group know here that the Aeromobile and Stefan and Vados and his team, Yaraj Vakulik and Stefan Klein, are up for an award at South by Southwest here in the U.S. And we are, Roland, who owns South by Southwest, thank you for just noticing these gentlemen and the amazing work that they do. And Stefan, keep on doing the great job, and especially the great job you're doing with your son. You know, he's our future, and that's so important. So thank you again.
Thank you very much. Thank you for inviting me.
So with that said, we're going to take out and say goodbye to Jay Logan and goodbye to Stefan Rodolph. And everyone have a great day, and we're going out with Patent Leather's Music Treasure, which is perfect for this moment. We've had two people who shared the treasures of life on Listen, Give Live, and Savoy. Thank you, everyone.